The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, episode 539. Cool stuff found for Sunday, February 8th, 2015. And welcome, yes, to 2015, the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in today cool stuff found, and we share that cool stuff found and talk about some cool stuff found that we found ourselves, too. Sponsors for this episode include Gazelle at gazelle.com, where you can sell back all your old stuff and get some money for it and even buy stuff from them. We'll talk more about that, and Squarespace at squarespace.com/MGG, where the coupon code MGG gets you 10% off of Squarespace's services. Squarespace, build it beautiful. We will talk more about that later in the show, too, here in Durham, New Hampshire, and temporarily in 2014 there for a moment, but in now 2015, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here, firmly rooted in 2015, in Fairfield, Connecticut, this is John F. Braun.
Time's an abstract concept, though, isn't it, John? I mean, take what we do with this show, for example, right? We are here now doing this, but when I say now, you listening hear it as now for you. And, you know, that's just how it goes. So now is it now? Right. There's that great line in Minority Report. That Tom Cruise movie where people were convicted of crimes that they might commit, you know, and
pre-crime.
Yeah. But when the visionary, the soothsayer, whatever she was, when she came out of the thing and she actually asked that question, is it now? I love that line. That's one of my favorite lines in the movie.
Or can you see?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So is it now? Is it now? Is it time to do cool stuff found, John?
Oh, what was I going to say? Time is an illusion. Lunchtime doubly so. That's one of the best ones from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah.
A fountain of all knowledge and wisdom, I think. It's a good book.
Yes. A font. Font? Fountain? Are those words interchangeable in that way? I don't know. I should know.
Don't think so.
Okay. I can't just make stuff up. I can't make up literary facts as well as computer facts. I can only make up the computer facts during the show. Is that right?
Sure.
Okay. Let's go to Jeremy. Jeremiah. This is something I can't believe we've never mentioned it, but I don't believe we've ever mentioned it. So it does not fall. We will have a section of Cool Stuff Found Reprise where we bring back some things that we've talked about before, perhaps with a different angle on them. However, Jeremiah says, I wanted to share a quick tip that I've been jazzed about lately. I'm a relatively new Mac user. I bought my first MacBook Pro last April. I found an article that, anyway, he goes through this whole big process. If you use Dropbox, you can have Dropbox save your screenshots to Dropbox folder, and that way your screenshots are available on all your Macs. And this happens. I believe there's a setting if you go to Dropbox preferences, but it will ask you. So if you click on the Dropbox menu at the top and go to preferences, does it give you? Yeah. On the import screen or preference pane down at the bottom, there's a little checkbox, share screenshots using Dropbox. And then instead of saving, it does two things for me, frankly. Number one, it keeps all the screenshots from appearing on my desktop, which I don't want. And it saves them in your Dropbox folder, which means you can get at them anywhere, which is super handy if you're using screenshots for that purpose. So this is Command-Shift-3 will just immediately take a screenshot of all of your entire screen or screens. If you have multiple monitors, you actually get two images at the moment. And then if you want to get a more narrow view, you can do Command-Shift-4, which gives you crosshairs. With the crosshairs, you can draw on the screen a box, and as soon as you're finished drawing the box, the screenshot is taken. Or with Command-Shift-4, once you have the crosshairs up, you can hit the space bar to toggle between crosshairs and window camera mode. And with window camera mode, you just float over your windows, and when you get on the one that you want to take a picture of, snap it, and it will actually take a picture of that window. It'll clear out the background, do a little drop shadow for you, and that will also save to your Dropbox folder. And if that's not enough, adding the control key to that mix, so Command-Shift-3 or Command-Shift-4, adding control, so Command-Control-Shift-3 or 4, gets you the screenshot not saved to a file, but instead put on your clipboard. So you can paste it in wherever you want, including into an email. So there you go. That's a start, John. Did I miss anything on the screenshot thing there?
Look at that. No, that's nice. Yeah, I just saw it come up. You can either say save or no thanks.
Or no thanks. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I like it. I like screenshots. I use them constantly. Along those lines, Bruce hipped us to something called ExpanDrive, E-X-P-A-N-D-R-I-V-E. ExpanDrive, according to Bruce, is the fastest, or according to them, the fastest way to upload and manage files in the cloud. You can access files in the cloud just like it's on a USB drive connected to your Mac. It sort of consolidates all of your cloud services into one. So it manages all your stuff and makes it so that you have one big cloud storage device called ExpanDrive. So it's pretty cool. ExpanDrive.com. We'll put a link in the show notes to that. Full show. Did you check out ExpanDrive, John?
I've not checked out ExpanDrive, but now that we're talking about online or talking about cloud storage, Dave, I thought I mentioned two things that I've noticed as of late. So one actually is with Dropbox. I don't know if you got the memo here, but apparently Dropbox now is... I got a note the other day. They said, hey, you know what? We got this new email client, but we think you should check out here. And if you do, we'll give you some bonus space.
Oh, interesting.
Right? I think it's Mailbox.
Mailbox. That's been around for a long time. But now I guess they're enticing people in with bonus space, huh?
Yeah. So that's one thing. So if you, it's probably buried in your... buried in your inbox somewhere.
I'm sure.
If you opt to try out the Mailbox client, they'll toss you an extra, I guess, gig of space.
I don't think that's new. In fact, I think that's been around for years. But I mean, we've never talked about it.
I just got a reminder the other day, and I don't know, maybe they just sent it to me saying, hey, you know, you're not using this, so do it. So yeah, so now I got a total of 22.2 gigs on my Dropbox account, is nice.
That is nice. Yeah.
And speaking of the cloud services, Dave, so one that I just got on the bandwagon with, and I'll post a link here because you can get bonus space, but I don't know why I've never really paid attention to them, but you know, Microsoft's doing some interesting things out there as of late, but Microsoft has, I think they used to call it SkyDrive, and now it's OneDrive.
Yeah.
And I actually signed up for that. And the only thing I got to say with them, I mean, you know, I have multiple cloud sync services just because. But you sign up with them, you get 15 gigs. And then if you choose to sync your camera roll, which I did on my iOS devices, they throw you another 15. So I got 30 gigs. That's pretty generous for free.
That's
so
pretty good.
Yeah, again, it's, you know, yet another. I think I've got all the cloud services covered right now. Dropbox, Bitkasa, Drive you and I use.
It sounds like ExpanDrive might be perfect for someone like you that uses all of these and has stuff spread between them.
Yeah, because, you know, it does get kind of confusing because, you know, each one indicates what it's doing in the Finder with an icon, and this can get kind of chaotic if you use multiple services. They may fight with each other, so you may not be able to tell exactly which service you're using to sync things. So yeah, that's something I should be checking out. But cool. Yeah, hey, OneDrive, why not? I think it integrates all, and I think it's to coerce you to, you know, try out their Office offerings, which one would assume integrates well with their OneDrive. You know, I actually abandoned Office, Dave.
What are you using?
You know, it was one of my machines here. So, you know, we had gotten media keys long ago for Office. And I think I tried to activate it once too often because one of my machines, it basically came up and said, "Yep, sorry, can't, you know, you've exceeded the number of times you can use this key." And I'm like, "Oh, man."
But all you got to do is call them on the, all you got to do is call Microsoft on the phone and they'll give you a new key in that instance.
Well, this key
I've been there.
Is,
I did it with my, yeah, that, with my NFR key that they gave us. It was like a non-issue. They do this all day long. It's crazy that it's the biggest farce in software licensing that all you got to do is call on the phone. And I mean, I have, as you do, rights to this license that, you know, that was given to me. And like you said, you know, you wind up using it on different machines over time. And then it just hits whatever Microsoft server's limit is. And you call them up, or you could try to do it online, which usually fails. And they say you got to call somebody, and you read this big, long number to them, and then they fix, you know, they give you one back, and then you're good to go.
Yeah, but, you know, I decided, you know what? Let me try something different.
Sure.
So I actually totally threw away Office on one of my machines, mm-hmm. and I'm going to see how I get along. And so far, the Apple apps seem to do pretty well. I mean,
well,
they understand...
That's
my Office
use.
Documents. I mean, they understand the, you know, Word files and Excel spreadsheets and stuff like that. And so I'm going to give that a go. See how, you know, how long I can get along without Office.
You'll go a long time. I have Office on my machine, and I make sure that it's at least launchable. If I need to do things that are a little more specific to Word, like if I'm sending back and forth a document where we're tracking changes or something, Pages is not the right thing to use as an intermediary if the person on the other end wants to use Word. But otherwise, Pages and Numbers, that's where I live. I mean, I don't ever launch Office for my own stuff. It's all in Pages and Numbers. They're great apps. There's one UI quirk with Numbers where you can't totally live on the keyboard like you could with Excel. You have to go to the mouse to jump cells sometimes if you're in the middle of data entry. But other than that, I find Numbers a very pleasing experience, and it launches much faster. And yeah, it's good. It's good. All right. Oh yeah. Listener John has a great story. Says here's a, short tip to hopefully help someone else from making the same dumb mistake that I did. At one point, the click on my MacBook Pro trackpad stopped working. I could move the cursor around, but I couldn't click on anything. Same result with the Bluetooth connected trackpad. I ran a full hardware test with the holding down D on startup, but it came up that everything was okay. Then I worked out that it would only happen when I was plugged into power and Ethernet. Now, I should note that I have Control Plane installed and had it set to turn Bluetooth on when connected to power and Ethernet and off when disconnected from power and Ethernet. This is so that I can have an external keyboard and trackpad at my desk to automatically turn Bluetooth on when I'm in a different or turn Bluetooth off when I'm in a different room of the house to reduce the trackpad, keyboard, connected, disconnected messages, which is smart, totally a smart use of Control Plane. As an aside, controlplaneapp.com is where that is. And that's an awesome use because if you are close enough to your trackpad and keyboard, you start getting those weird messages going back and forth. So that's I like it. In any event, he said, after a while trying to fix the problem, I thought I would try my Bluetooth mouse to see if that worked. I found my mouse sitting under a pile of papers that my kids had dropped on the desk. The papers were heavy enough that they were pressing down on the mouse button. Once I released the mouse, my problems were fixed. So, yeah, I've been through this, too. In fact, it's almost to the point where when I can't click on something, I start looking around for, you know, something being on top of either the trackpad or the mouse, you know, whatever might be buried under papers or books or something. And almost invariably, that's what it is. So great tip, John. Thank you for sending that in. That's it happens. It happens to the best of us. So good stuff. Good stuff. You ever been through that, John?
Malfunctioning? No.
I call that an error between the chair and the keyboard in the truest sense.
But, the only case I've heard of that is when people have swelling batteries.
Oh, well, yeah, that's a different one. That's right. That's right. Yeah.
We've had more than one person. They're like, yeah, all of a sudden my trackpad doesn't work anymore. I'm like, you notice a little bulge?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Those days have passed, though.
That's
I haven't
right.
heard of any battery catastrophes with any Apple stuff as of late.
Brian Monroe says in the chat room, much like we used to have to clean the lint off the rollers on our mice, now we have to clean the papers off the buttons on our Bluetooth mice and trackpads. That's funny. I'll say hi to everyone in the chat room at mattgeekgab.com/chat, right? No, /stream. I'm going to get it all wrong today. Now I'm going to have to make another URL. Maybe that one does exist, but it's mattgeekgab.com/stream is where you would go to join in the fun and chat with us and all the other listeners that join us for the stream. But you don't have to. That's the beauty. That's what we recorded this just for you. In a previous show, John, we were talking about solutions for someone who wants to add an SSD to a 2011 iMac or any iMac that has or any Mac that you don't want to open up. You want to add an SSD to it has Thunderbolt, but USB 2. So there was a period of time where Apple was putting Thunderbolt in machines, but before they started putting USB 3 in them. And if you want to do an external Thunderbolt drive or an external SSD drive, doing it over USB 2 will get you some of the advantages in terms of latency, but certainly not all of the speed advantages that USB 3 or Thunderbolt would provide. In that show, I made a recommendation that if you just got a Thunderbolt dock, you could then do a USB 3 drive. I was 100% wrong on that, and I have tested it and proven myself wrong. So I want to go back through. USB 3 USB drives connected to a Thunderbolt dock, any Thunderbolt dock that I've tested, that includes the little Kinex one that I mentioned in that show and also the Elgato one, will not show up as boot devices on a Mac. And I've tried this with a couple of different Macs as well. And listener Mark actually was quite instrumental in helping me down this path. So the following scenario, so that scenario will not boot. Thunderbolt dock passed through to a USB drive, either USB 2 or 3, it doesn't matter, will not show up as a boot option, and therefore you can't boot from it. However, the following are bootable options. Thunderbolt Direct Connect, so if you have a Thunderbolt drive or Thunderbolt enclosure, I should say, that will work, and it works great. If you have a Thunderbolt dock and you have a Thunderbolt drive plugged in to that dock, most docks provide pass-through for Thunderbolt, that will also boot. So Thunderbolt dock pass through to a Thunderbolt drive does work. If you have a USB drive, either USB 2 or 3, directly connected to your Mac, of course, that will boot as well. It's just the Thunderbolt pass through to USB 3 does not work. So unfortunately, to do this the right way, you've got to get a Thunderbolt drive or Thunderbolt enclosure and put a drive in that. I really like the LaCie rugged drives. They're some of my favorite enclosures that have come about, but Buffalo and Transcend also make great. The Buffalo drive station is a great Thunderbolt. Wow. Thunderbolt enclosure. And Transcend has a unit. It's about $200 too. The big problem with Thunderbolt is the cable. The connectors are expensive. There's a licensing fee and actually just some engineering involved. So you're going to pay a little bit more to go the Thunderbolt route, but just wanted to get that clarified there. Have you messed with Thunderbolt at all, John?
Dave, I'm glad you asked that question. I just recently dipped my toe in the water. So I just received something before yesterday that I plug into my Thunderbolt port and it works great.
Is it like a little light bulb?
No. Oh. Well, what I got, Dave, so and it was actually good that I got it. So we had, I think, in some post-show chat, we were talking about DisplayPort versus Thunderbolt versus all of that stuff. And so I decided to poke around and see if I could get a Thunderbolt / DisplayPort to HDMI adapter.
Sure.
So I could take what's on my MacBook Pro and you know, put it into my on my HDTV or my, you know, tuner. So hopped on and I received one, Dave, and it's pretty good. It does exactly what it should. So I, you know, hopped on Amazon like anybody. And so I did a search and the first thing that came up is a Amazon branded. Apparently they have a Amazon Basics line of things.
Yep.
$9.99.
Now this is explain what do they call this unit so that we can.
It's called the Amazon and I'll put a link. Okay. Amazon Basics Mini Display Port paren Thunderbolt, close paren, to HDMI adapter. And it does exactly what it should.
Yep.
Plugged it in my machine, plugged in, you know, plugged in my tuner. It's interesting because it doesn't show my TV as the device that's connected. It actually says Sony, blah, 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 which is the brand of my, you know, my switch.
Sure.
If you will, my HDMI or media tuner. Yeah. But yeah, it works great. You know, computer came up, saw the display, had a little slider for overscan because that's a problem sometimes with HDMI is that the picture is bigger than your TV. And it was good because I actually had missed a show. I'm actually going to shake my, I don't know why this happened, but Friday night, my TiVo like went into stupid mode. It said it was recording shows and I had like two or three shows queued up. And then I started to watch them and there was no video. And I'm like, well, what's wrong? And so I checked live TV and there was no live TV. I'm like, what the heck? So I, you know, like to solve almost any problem, the what I did is restarted the TiVo and then all of a sudden it got back in sync with my channels, but I missed my shows. Now, two of the shows were shown later on in the day, but one of the shows was not available again, unless I wanted to pay for it, which I didn't. So, but they did, it's an NBC show and actually they allow you to stream it on the web a day after they, you know, show it on the network.
Sure.
And it worked great, you know, hooked up the machine, you know, played the video, went full screen, dragged it over to the, you know, that screen. And, but no, neat little thing, $9.99, you know, it does exactly what it needs to.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. That's, and so that's mini DisplayPort to HDMI. That's not Thunderbolt, which is a minor distinction because it uses the same port on your Mac.
Yeah, at first I thought it was the wrong thing because I tried to plug it in and it didn't plug it in because it's keyed. I'm like, oh, duh.
Gotta go the right way. Yeah, right. Right. Sure. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah.
But no, it was nice because I've played stuff using AirPlay and AirPlay is pretty good. Every now and then I'll get a stutter sometimes or maybe some pixelization. I don't know if it's my bandwidth or just AirPlay. AirPlay is usually good enough, but HDMI is better, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah. There's less lag and much better.
Yeah. So I chose the video. And then the only thing I had to do is go to audio and then choose HDMI. You know, a new choice now appears, you know, for my audio output. And then everything was great.
That's awesome. Speaking of speeds, John, if you want to check your speeds and you don't want to run flash, which is what speed test typically uses, you can go to, as Juan recommends, speedof.me and check your speed in an HTML5 thing. I've tested it here and it doesn't, it seems that for me, speedof.me does not have enough bandwidth to actually test my internet connection. But perhaps it does for you. Juan said it has plenty for him and he's got over 100 megabits as well. So. But certainly another speed test option, which we like. That's good. Speaking of speed tests, John, you did some testing this week.
Well, yeah. So I found a couple of tools here because I was getting curious about the nature of the GPU in my MacBook Pro. As most know, many of the latest MacBook Pros have two GPUs. And I'll talk about a tool that deals with that in a moment, but say you want to, test out your GPU just to see how it performs. Well, I found a really neat, it's called both a stress test and a benchmark. You can actually submit the benchmarks to a database,
nice.
But it's also a stress test in that it really beats on your GPU. We've had more than one we talked about this. Some Macs have GPU issues. Well, how do you stress your GPU? Well, you get something like this and it'll basically, you know, max it out and, you know, get it all heated up and, you know, test it out thoroughly. So if you do have a GPU, if you suspect you have a GPU issue, getting a program like this is probably, the best way to go. It's a GPU test from geeks3d.com. You got to be careful on the download page. They have be careful what button you press because they have some wacky ads and stuff. So just be careful when you go through this. But it runs a whole bunch of benchmarks, and you know if you want to And you want to see what your GPU can do. It does some really nice, you know, interesting textured and rotational kind of things. And you can get it for Windows, for Linux, and of course for OS X.
I got to check that out.
Yeah, yeah. If you do the benchmark, you know, it'll show frames per second and, you know, some other metric. It was interesting because, you know, I tried it on my Mac Mini here, which, you know, the 2010 Mac Mini has the, I think, the integrated, let me see. You can actually usually find out what GPU or graphics you're running. I use iStat menus, and it'll actually show you in the one of the lists here. So actually, this has the NVIDIA GeForce 320M, which is, I think most recognize as a pretty wimpy GPU. And when I was stress testing or running a benchmark, it was coming out, you know, single digit frames per second. It does okay for some older games, but actually some newer games, they actually say, sorry, Charlie, this, you know, that it's not going to cut it.
Sure.
I should upgrade this thing. What am I going to do with it, though? I mean, it's still a pretty good machine.
Turn it into
a couple hundred. I could get a couple hundred bucks for it, maybe.
That's true. Yeah. Almost certainly. Yeah. You got another one for us, John?
Well, I might as well mention that second one here. So if you do want to have fun with your GPU on your MacBook Pro, and this only runs on the MacBook Pro, because that, I'm not sure if some of the other systems have dual GPUs, Dave, other than the MacBook Pro. Do you know that? Do iMacs or any other?
Not sure. I think it's just the portables, because the integrated one uses less battery power. I think that that's the only one that's got the dual.
I'm sorry. Okay. No, wait, I'm getting out of order here. We'll another thing that I found, Dave, that's kind of cool. I didn't see it in our show notes here. Maybe I mentioned it in passing, but I thought it was something neat. So I started looking at some of my iOS apps that, you know, I use on a pretty frequent basis. And here's a really neat one. If you want to find out what's happening in your area. So Instagram is a tool that a lot of people use to share their photos. I do. I think you do, Dave. A lot of people do. Mostly to take pictures of food, but also just if you happen to be out and about and want people to see what you're, you know, what's up. There's an app called InstaLook app. Well, it's called InstaLook, and you can find information on it at InstaLook app and download it. The cool part about it is that it'll let you look at photos based on location. So if you want to see what's happening in your neighborhood, so if people choose to geotag their photos, whether it's with you know, embedded GPS, embedded coordinates, or they tag it saying I'm at this place here, it'll show you the photos that are tagged as such in your general area. And you can even move the little map around and click on different areas near you. It's like, you know, I have, you know, a couple of colleges near me. So, you know, if I, you know, see them tagged there, you know, you can click on that and see all the shenanigans going on at your local, institution of higher learning. I thought it's pretty neat. It's cool. A neat way. Just a neat way to, again, see stuff that's relevant or irrelevant in your neighborhood.
That's right. Yes, that's right. Yeah. Cool. You know, actually there's some more I want to talk to you about when it comes to photos, John, because I believe you've checked out the new Photos app. But first, I want to talk about Gazelle at gazelle.com. They are our first sponsor for this show. And the folks at Gazelle have a fantastic business model. You know, I love anything that sets out and succeeds at saving me a headache, because like you just mentioned, John, you know, you might want to sell one of your computers. Well, if that computer is either a laptop or an iOS device, an iPad, an iPhone, that sort of thing, Gazelle will take the headache off of your hands. What you do is you go to gazelle.com. You can go on the very device that you're going to want to sell to them, and you tell them what you have, what condition it's in, some of the specs, how much RAM it's got, you know, how much storage it has, if it's an iPhone, and what carrier it is, and if it's unlocked or if it's still locked, they'll take it either way. And then once you give them all these parameters and what condition it's in, and then they don't make you get crazy. It's just three different things. It's like, you know, bad, okay, and fantastic, right? I think is basically all it is. And then they'll give you a price and they'll say, all right, based on everything you just said, we'll pay you X. If you like the number that you see, you then at that point create an account with them. And creating an account is nothing more than giving them your email address and your physical address, because the next thing that happens is they mail you a box at their cost. You get the box, you put the computer or the iPhone or whatever it is in it, and ship it back to them again at their cost. The return shipping label is in the box that you get. When they get it, they confirm that you sent them what you said you were going to send them, and they send you your money. That's it. That's all it takes. It takes me about 90 seconds to explain all of that. Probably won't take you 90 seconds to actually do all of that. It really works that simply. And you can get the money in a variety of ways. They can send you a check if you're into that. If you have a PayPal account, they will send you the money via PayPal. You don't pay any fees. They cover that. If you are an Amazon customer, they will give you 5% more as an Amazon gift card, because they've worked out a deal where that works out to everyone's benefit. So that's it. Gazelle.com. Now, if you're in the market for something and you're okay with having something that's used and tested and then certified by Gazelle, go ahead and check out Gazelle's used stuff. They have a pre-certified. I mean, this stuff is in great shape. They stand behind it. And it's stuff, you know, that they've brought in and felt, wow, this is in really good condition. Instead of, you know, selling this via our resellers or what have you, we can go and recyclers. We can just, you know, turn this around and put it back into somebody's hands. And that's what they do. And save you quite a bit of money in the process. So check it all out. Gazelle.com. They're great people. And we've had fantastic stories from you about their stellar customer service. I love it. So check it all out, gazelle.com, and make sure when you're going through that checkout process, they'll ask you where you heard about it. Please do make sure to tell them Mac Geek Gab. They have us in a little drop down there, so it makes it easy for you. Just choose Mac Geek Gab, and that way they know that that what they're doing with us here works for them and for you and, of course, for us. So check it out, gazelle.com.
Wow. And with- yeah, it is easy, Dave. While you were talking,
yeah.
I actually got a quote on my Mac Mini here. So I'll have to consider
they'll take
that.
A Mac Mini. I was wondering about that. I wasn't entirely sure. That's outstanding. Oh, that's awesome, man.
Yeah, they yeah, so it's pretty straightforward. You have to know how to get the specs on the Mac. So it started off,
sure,
and it said, what processor do you have? And I said 2.4 gig. And then based on that, it kind of drills down and it kind of gets a better idea of specifically what machine you had. And eventually it said, oh, well, you have a Mac Mini Core 2 Duo 2.4 gigahertz 2010. And I'm like, well, yes, I do.
That's awesome.
So,
so
yeah,
I spent more time explaining it than you did actually getting a quote. So in real time, folks, here we are for you. So, yeah, check them out, gazelle.com. And as I said, let them know we sent you. All right. But, John, you have Apple this week pushed out a very beta version of their new replacement, if you will, for iPhoto and Aperture called Photos. And you wisely made a copy of your photo library and then took it for a spin inside the new Photos app. I'm curious what your very initial sort of brief thoughts. I say initial and brief because you and I talked about this and you haven't gone all that deep with it, but I'd love to hear about as deep as you've gone.
So the first thing, yeah. So what I did, so I went to the developer site, you know, for $99, you can be part of the developer program. And something different happened this time around, where a lot of times when you download an OS from the developer site, it just downloads a disk image. This did something different in that it said, okay, here's the special program I want you to download. And then it goes to the app store and then it downloads the what they call the developer seed onto,
sure,
the drive. So what I did a carbon copy cloner of the drive in my MacBook Pro to an external drive. And then ran that program on that because I do not, you know, and people, I still see people in my stream asking, you know, should I install a developer seed on my day-to-day machine? And I'm like, no.
No, that's what I do on my laptop when I'm traveling at WWDC. And I do not recommend it for anyone, but it is, you know, fun living on the edge. So,
yeah, but I wanted to do this because, you know, the word got out, you know, I don't think it's a secret that, you know, Photos is in the latest developer seed. And, so I decided to check it out. My initial impression is that, I don't know. I mean, give them time. So I started it up. I have like over 100 gigs of in an Aperture library. But, you know, I started it up and it said, I see you have an Aperture library and an iPhoto library. You want to import those or massage those? Because I don't think it disables the functionality with Aperture. You can still use Aperture, but it makes it so that photos can understand it. And then from that point, I guess the only initial fish shake is not so much the features, but so I get into it. And all of a sudden you're looking at a screen and you're like, okay, now what? Kind of like iTunes, and this kind of aggravates me, they hid the sidebar. So like I'm starting off and I'm like, well, what do I do? It showed me a context that I didn't understand. It was like all my photos. And I'm like, well, I don't want to see stuff like that. Or I don't want to see that. I want to see my projects listed. And now they're called albums. And once I found the choice saying, show me the sidebar, then it all became clear. And it's like, oh, okay. And then I started looking at the photos and no, it does not have. It's interesting because it's selectively, and again, this is kind of Apple's style with or what they've been doing as of late, is that a lot of people are saying, well, it doesn't support this feature anymore. The thing is, it can, but they leave a lot of stuff hidden. I think they're really trying to simplify the interface in that they're not showing you a lot of things that you may not need to know, which like Aperture can and will do. They kind of make you intentionally enable it. For example, like a location, the default behavior was if you click on a photo, it doesn't show you the location. But if you want to show that, then you can, if you can dig in and find the option, fine. The number of things that you can do is not as rich as Aperture. I mean, a lot of them are there, you know, and I actually did a comparison side by side. I'll have to do a more detailed comparison, but you know, basic tools for doing like kind of global changes, you know, to exposure and the sharpness and the color and things like that are there, but some of the more sophisticated tools are not yet there. Now, whether they will be, who knows? So I don't know. I mean, you know, it's a beta. I mean, they may be adding features based on feedback. It did crash when I exited it more than once, so it's definitely not ready for prime time.
Sure. Sure. Yeah.
But it's developer preview. But, you know, once I dug in and learned how to display the data in the format that I'm used to, then I was pretty okay with it.
Cool.
So we'll see. It's but yeah, if the feature set is as it, you know, fixed and they're not going to add anymore, then yeah, I would say it's not an Aperture replacement. Well, it could be. I don't know. I'll have to try it out because, you know, I'd never really used a lot of the more advanced features. Like one group of people said brushes. It doesn't have brushes. Okay. I never really used brushes.
Sure.
I would apply global adjustments to my photos. I really wouldn't get, you know, down and dirty. So for me, it may be, the reason I more moved to Aperture was just that iPhoto kind of has problems dealing with larger libraries and maybe Photos gets around that. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm curious. I have not tested it yet, but I'm very interested in seeing how, how it works out. The thing that's curious for me is what's going to happen with iCloud Photo Library, especially with somebody like you, right? That's got, you know, gobs and gobs of photos. How is this going to work? I fear based on their history, I don't have faith that Apple has done this part of the cloud right, because they've never done cloud storage right. CalDAV is fine. Their IMAP stuff is fine. You know, that the card dev stuff is fine. So that sort of syncing is pretty robust. But in terms of files and photos, their history is either non-existent or horrible. So I'm curious to see, and it's tepid curiosity, I think, is probably the right term.
Yeah, and you know, that's a part really honestly doesn't concern me. My primary use of Aperture or similar things is to deal with my, or I'll offload my photos from whatever camera, whether it be an iPhone camera, and I'll create. I'm really not concerned about that part. I mean, Aperture still, though, consumes my, you know, the contents of my photo stream.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And that's fine and actually that was the other kind of neat thing I think I mentioned to you, but OneDrive does that too. It actually consumes my camera roll and syncs it to the OneDrive. So I have now a backup of iCloud Photo, or what iCloud Photo Library does as well, is that, you know, the OneDrive is syncing my photos, as does most of the other services, right? Dropbox can do that for you. Actually, Dropbox does that for me.
Right, yes. Right. Yeah, totally. Yeah. All right, so let's see if we can motor through a few of these here quickly, John, because it is a Cool Stuff Found show. So there is an app that came out called Phone Expander, and it does a couple of things, but its primary goal is to free up storage on your iPhone. You plug it in, you tether it to your Mac via USB, and it frees up stuff, specifically a lot of those things that wind up in temp storage in other there on your iPhone. So we've talked about this in many ways in the past, or at least tried to deal with it in shows that are more, you know, question focused. And so hopefully Phone Expander can do that for some. I have yet to really have a scenario where it makes sense to test it, but I look forward to doing so. John, you mentioned Google Docs earlier, and we use Google Docs here for a lot of things for Mac Geek Gab. And I happened the other day while I was putting together our agenda, I hit command question mark while I was in Google Docs, and up came a list of all the keyboard shortcuts for that Google document that I was in. You know, command B is for bold, command I for italics, but there's lots and lots and lots. You can copy formatting and paste formatting and all kinds of stuff. So it's worth hitting that command question mark in all your different Google Docs as you go through, because I think it's fascinating how that works. It always blows me away. And I know I shouldn't be blown away by this, because JavaScript is a cool and powerful thing. But when the command key works in a web browser window, like that browser window is its, whatever's running in that browser window is its own app. I always kind of dig that. So that's good. McKay has a question, or perhaps a request.
Hi, John and Dave. If you have too many Apple products, then it's good for you. I think it can be said that you have an orchard. So next time you visit a friend and see an iPad on his couch, an iPhone in his hand, and a MacBook on his desk, say that he is growing an orchard. I look forward to your thoughts on this. Over and out.
Sure. I like it. It's funny. Cute. I'm sure we'll use that, John. What do you think? How's your orchard doing over there?
How about a peck? Can we call it a peck?
Peck. Oh, yeah. Right. Because that's with the apples that you've picked in your
ancient.
Yeah.
Ancient unit of measure. Right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. I like it. That's good.
Hey, yeah, orchard is good, too.
We've been fans of Alfred for a while. The app on OS X that lets you do all kinds of automated things. And it's worth noting that Alfred Remote for iOS is out now. And what Alfred Remote lets you do is trigger things on your Mac, workflows, snippets, whatever it is that you've got Alfred configured to do. You can have your iOS device trigger those things so that you have sort of a control center for your Mac. I'm thinking about ways of using this during the show, because one of the reasons we use an outboard mixer is because I don't want to have to dig through four windows to do something, right? You know, I always want to be able to, if I need to get softer or louder, I can just, you know, I can do that and make myself softer. Obviously, that's not a good thing at this point in time, but it's nice to know that that button is always in front of me. I feel like maybe this Alfred Remote could take care of some things, like maybe playing the theme music at the end, so I don't have to dig through and all that stuff. So we will put a link to that in the show notes, too. Are you an Alfred user, John?
No.
Okay.
Should be.
I know. Yeah. I need to use it more. Maybe this Alfred Remote thing will take care of it for us.
Dave, speaking of remote,
yeah,
and iOS.
Yeah.
I found this out, and I don't know if we mentioned it, but I just thought I'd mention it here. And
sure.
I remembered my reminder to remind myself to talk about this. But QuickTime Player, I did not know it had this capability, and I'm not sure how I stumbled across this. But as we mentioned, QuickTime Player, you know, is a great utility for, well, recording what's happening on your screen, or at least it's free, you know, and it does very basic. But I didn't know this, Dave. If you have an iOS device plugged in, it has to be plugged in. That's okay. The only key here. And you go to screen recording, and then there's a little pull down. you're going to see an additional option. You're going to see your iOS device as an option.
Really?
And you can make a movie of what you're doing on your iOS device.
How did I not know this?
I don't know how I didn't know it either. It didn't make. I mean, I guess it makes sense in that you need the bandwidth of a wired connection to be able to do this. So it doesn't show up as an option.
Yeah, you don't want to have to compress it and make the iOS device do the work of sending it over AirPlay or something. That can get really weird. I've done that with like Reflector and things like that, and imperfect is a great word to use for that. So yeah, it makes sense to tether it. But wow.
Yeah, so if you're having an iOS issue or you just want to demonstrate what you're doing on your iOS device to someone else, break out QuickTime Player, plug your iOS device in, and it should show up as a source in the, I'm pretty sure it's screen record. Is it screen recording or movie recording? I'm pretty sure it's screen recording.
Okay. Wow, that's pretty cool, man.
Wow. Yeah, no, it is screen recording.
Okay. Dude, nice find. And I know we're going to have a billion people tell us, dude, that's existed for a year or more. But that's the beauty of these Cool Stuff Found shows. That's it. Yeah. A lot of what we do is sort of offhandedly mentioning things, and we'll get comments from you folks like, dude, you said that thing. It took like 2 seconds and it changed my world. And so this is one of those things, changed my world. Leon has a great, Leon actually has quite a few, but Leon on our Google Plus group hipped us to a new service and app called Be My Eyes. And you download this app, it's free. And when you launch it, you indicate whether you are a person with sight or without sight. And what the service does is it's meant to help people that lack the ability to see, blind people. And what you do is you sign up and you say, yeah, I'm willing to help. And then at some point in time, you might get a little push notification on your phone that says, hey, somebody needs help. And it could just be someone in a grocery store that needs a label read to them, or might be someone, you know, somewhere in a public place that needs a sign read to them or something, where the ability to see would be a very, very helpful thing in their world. And using the camera on their phone, they send you you get to see what they see, and you have a voice conversation. You read to them whatever they need read, and then off you go without your day. So it's called Be My Eyes. And I think it's a pretty cool, idea. I have had it installed for a couple of weeks now and have not had anything come through, but you know, hey, I'm happy to help if I can. And I thought you folks might be too. Had you heard of this, John?
No, that's a neat application.
Yeah, I thought so. Hey, I want to talk about our second sponsor here, John. And our second sponsor is Squarespace at squarespace.com/MGG. That's the first way you let them know that we sent you there. Now, Squarespace, they are their whole goal again. You know, this whole concept of taking your headaches away. If you have something that you want to put on the web, Squarespace is the way to do this, right? Because they take the headaches away and just let you do whatever it is you want to do and put it on the web as quickly as you would like to do that. And pretty cheap, too. It starts at $8 a month, right? So you go to squarespace.com. You pick a template. They've already created templates. You can put your own pictures in, but you don't have to. They've got pictures out there that you can use, or you can use the stock ones in the template, or maybe you use a template without pictures. That's okay too, right? And so you choose your template, and that's it. You put your content in, whatever your content is. If you want to build a blog, you choose a template for a blog site. If you want to put a storefront up, fine. If you just want to have like a one pager that explains something that you're doing and maybe a form for people to sign up with, they do that too. They'll link with like MailChimp and that sort of stuff so that you can just collect information and maybe send out a mailing list. This stuff is super super simple, and it's beautiful. It's organized. All these templates are built for to work on any platform. They're responsive in design, which means that the same URL for everyone, you looks good. It looks appropriate on your iPhone for an iPhone screen. It looks appropriate on your iPad for an iPad screen. And of course, on your Mac or any desktop computer for that matter, it looks appropriate there too. These designs just work. It really, really good stuff. Again, if you want to build a storefront, they've got the whole ability to build a shopping cart and even links to an e-commerce engine. You can get that totally set up. I set up a storefront for us for a band concert event that we put on, and it took me less than an hour to put it all together, including getting set up with the merchant account and all that good stuff. You don't need a credit card to start your trial. You get a 14-day free trial. So just go to squarespace.com/MGG and start. Now, here's the deal. Once you are ready to pay, you will need your credit card, but you're also going to need a coupon code of MGG. You get 10% off your first purchase when you use coupon code MGG. So that takes that $8 a month and drops it down even further. Great stuff that they've got going on here with Squarespace. And I really, really think you're going to love what they're able to make you do. Squarespace, build it beautiful. Squarespace.com/MGG. And that's where we're at. I've got my own personal blog there with Squarespace, and it makes it so easy. I've got the page for the band Fling that I'm in. Flingrocks.com is there at Squarespace. Again, it just makes it easy, and it's good stuff. So check it out. Squarespace.com. Squarespace, build it beautiful. Squarespace.com/MGG, and MGG is your coupon code for 10% off. John, I want to go through a couple of things quickly here that you and I have mentioned before in the show, but I think we have some new light to bring to them, for lack of a better term. Don Melton is a guy that used to work at Apple. He was the one that I believe, and I might get this wrong, and then Don will tell me I got it wrong, but I believe he was the guy that led the team that built Safari and WebKit and all of that good stuff. So he's got some cred to his name. He's a movie fanatic as well, and he enjoys keeping his own personal movie collection DRM free, which means he buys Blu-ray discs and then rips them to his computer and then stores the disc away, but keeps the movie on his drives. He uses Handbrake like a lot of us do, but he got kind of sick and tired of Handbrake's presets not quite doing the level of quality versus compression that we've all come to love from Apple's, algorithms. When you buy a movie from the iTunes from the iTunes store, you get a really high quality 1080p movie, and the size is not overly burdensome. Handbrake, even if you choose like the Apple TV 3 preset, the size can get pretty unwieldy sometimes. So Don went through and figured out all the different little tips and tricks that you needed to do with Handbrake, and he built a series of scripts. So much so that you need to be comfortable with the command line to do this, but you don't need to be that comfortable with it. You will, even going through the process of getting set up with Don's scripts, you will probably get yourself to the point where you're pretty comfortable with the command line. And so really, once you get these scripts installed, Don's scripts make it such that all you have to do is go to the command line, go to the folder where your movie is, and type transcode-video.sh and the name, the file name of the movie, and then it takes care of it. It analyzes it. It decides which algorithm is going to be best to use based on the size of your movie, and off you go. So we'll put a link in the show notes to Don's GitHub repository where you can download the scripts. There are instructions there on how to get everything set up. The best way to do it is to use something else that we've mentioned as cool stuff found called Homebrew. Homebrew is a package manager for OS X where you can install. It's probably the most popular one for OS X. It's certainly a very robust one. Very easy to install Homebrew too. You go to brew.sh and there's literally one line that you copy and paste into the terminal that installs all of the Homebrew Package Manager. And then from there, you do things like if you need to install, something from Homebrew, you know, you need this MKV tool Nix for Dawn scripts. You just type in the command line, brew space, install space, MKV tool Nix, and boom, there it is. That goes and downloads it and puts it in the right places. But we'll put the link to Dawn scripts out there. I've been using them and I don't know why I got out of the habit of using them, but I've been using them again and they work fantastic. Don's a smart guy. He's updating them and tweaking them constantly. He's available at Don Melton on Twitter. If you want to, and he's happy to engage with anyone. He really, really good guy and very accessible guy and, really puts a lot of time into this. So the best thing I can do is just tell you to use the scripts and enjoy them. So have you used, you don't use Brew yet either, or do you have Brew installed for something else, John?
No, I use a different package manager and I can't find that particular program here, but Dave, I've been using for a while that I've heard of Brew, but the one that I use, Dave, two pieces. So there's one called Think.
Yeah.
Another.
Yeah.
Environment that people use, but the reason I like it is because there is a GUI that you can put on top of it called Think Commander.
Nice.
Making it a bit nicer to deal with. And I'm looking here now, it's showing me through Think Commander that right now they have about 10,084 packages that you can choose from, but nice. That's not one of them. The MK, I searched for MK and I can't find it in the list here, but
oh,
it has. Yeah. No, I wonder why that is. I don't know if I need to pull it from another spot or make a request or what.
Yeah.
Like GIMP and other tools. I've compiled those. It still does what I need. It's not the new kid on the block. Maybe I'll look at, I don't know if I want to have multiple package managers. No, it's easy, right? Just from the Brew, right?
Oh, it's cake. Yeah. I mean, it literally is one line you type in. It's at the bottom of the brew.sh page. It's right underneath where it says install Homebrew, and it starts with the word Ruby, and you just copy this and paste it in. You've got to put in your OS 10 password when you do this because it's going to put some stuff in places. But I can tell you, I've done this on every Mac I have, and what they're doing is safe. And yeah. Listen, it's not every day I'm going to tell you to go to a website, highlight something they have there and just blind faith, trust it, post, paste it in the terminal and go, right? Give it your password and let it have full access to your system. But on this one, I do it on mine. So I'm okay with you doing it on yours. So, and by you, I mean, of course you, John, but I mean all of you. So, hey, you started talking about this before. You want to take us to your cool stuff found reprise here, John?
Yes. Yeah, so I found another little GPU goodie here. So I noticed, again, that the MacBook Pro has two different GPUs. And, the terminology gets kind of confusing, Dave. So they call one discrete and one integrated.
Okay.
And based on the wording, most people would have no clue as to which one is, why are there two and which one's better and what's the deal?
Sure.
And I wanted to find that out. So I actually found a tool. So one tool that you can use to switch between them. So the strategy is that the machine will use. Here's the difference. The integrated GPU is not as powerful, but it's more power friendly. Okay. And the discrete GPU is the one that's a separate. So integrated is one that's part of, I don't know if it's necessarily part of the Intel processor, but I think it's also made by Intel, or at least the machine that I have. It's an Intel.
It's bundled with the CPU, I believe. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So that's what integrated means. And the thing is that they're in general more energy efficient. How do I know this? Because the thing is, it's interesting, Dave. So if you go to Energy Saver and on this machine, you'll see on the top of the screen, you'll see a choice here that I didn't see on my other machines, but it says, hey, graphics, you want better battery life or higher performance? Well, usually I want better battery life. Unless the GPU stinks. And the thing is right now, so for example, this machine here using iStat menus, it says, oh, well, you're using the Intel HD graphics 4000. If I change the higher performance, then it's going to switch it to the other one, which in this case, well, wouldn't it be nice if there was a tool that would let you look at the different ones and let you switch rather than using Energy Saver to switch to whichever one you have here. Well, I found a little ditty here called GFX Cart Status. And that's its purpose in life. It's to tell you, it will tell you which GPU you're running, but also let you manually select which one you would like to use if you think you know better.
Sure. Yeah, right.
That's just an interesting tool. And actually, I want to run the benchmark to see how measurable the performance is between the two here. So you can use the benchmark program that I mentioned earlier and see which is which. And I believe also it's interesting. If you go to Activity Monitor, it will actually show you. I'm trying to recall. I think in the energy saver, in the energy section here, I think you can, there actually is, yes, there is a graphics card entry. And it's funny because right now I'm looking at all of the apps here that are listed. So again, if you go to the energy tab, there is an optional thing saying requires high performance graphics. Now, right now, none of my programs indicate that, yes, they require it.
Right.
But programs can do so. So if there is a choice to be made, a program can switch to the more efficient or more powerful GPU.
Sure. Oh, cool. All right. Sure. You know, Jason Hooper 99, actually on Twitter, is always helpful, when it comes to prepping for these cool stuff found shows. He's constantly pouring stuff at us. So he's a good guy to follow, actually, but he recommended two. One was in terms of the ability to convert files, which can be really handy if you've got some old files in a format that you no longer have an app available to read. And John, you might find yourself in this boat if you've got some file that's only openable by Word and now you don't have Word. The old one that we mentioned, I believe, in the very first Cool Stuff Found show was called Zamzar at zamzar.com. And now there is a new one that Jason found called Cloud Convert, which seems quite similar to Zamzar, and I would bookmark both of them just to have them there for when you need those files, because it's a handy little thing. So check it out. Yeah, Zamzar at Zamzar.com and Cloud Convert at CloudConvert.com. Good stuff. John, you know, when we do this show, well, in the beginning, we have an agenda. It may not seem like that every week, but we do have an agenda. And it used to be that I would print out the agenda and then scratch off items on the agenda. And then that way I'd have a record of what we did so that, you know, tomorrow when I get to my desk, I can go through, delete the things that we've already talked about, maybe queue up, you know, we can make a decision about the things that we haven't. Is it something that we're going to talk about or no, you know, that really isn't going to make it for the show. And then, you know, but it's good to know, because tomorrow I will not, going through, especially a list like we've gone through today, there's no way I'll remember everything. And so I do, I scratch it off. A number of years ago, I did away with using paper. I went paperless and I use an app on my iPad called, I can't remember the name of it. I can never, Note Taker HD by Dan Bricklin, who was one of the creators of VisiCalc, the first killer app, I think, back in the day. But anyway, I've tried all kinds of styluses with this on my iPad, and on my larger iPad, most, you know, I had crappy styluses that I would get for free or whatever, you know, in like gimme bags at trade shows or whatever. And they would work fine. But as soon as I put like a glass shield protector on my iPad, and especially on my iPad mini, my ability to use the, you know, the little styluses with the foam on them or whatever, totally stopped. It just got unreliable. And I've been using my finger for the last year and a half. Well, recently the folks at Adonis is me. That's me. What's that? Adonit.net got me the new Jot Pro and Jot Mini to test, and I tested the Jot Pro during last week's show, and I've been going back and forth between both because I put them down and then just pick it up. They are really high quality styluses. Now I'm using them for a very simple purpose. I'm not drawing. I mean, I am drawing with it, but really I'm just, you know, scratching off things on a PDF and writing down timestamps of like when the ad serves so that I can tell the team when that happened and those sorts of things and any notes we might have. But, you know, these guys, they figured it out a long time ago that the touch, you know, the way Apple has built the screen on this, it's for a finger. And what that means is you need a large, relatively large area to be pushed down in order for it to register as a touch. A pen or something fine point will not register as a touch reliably because it's simply built to ignore that stuff. However, when you're writing, you do want to have a, you know, a point that you are able to aim at. So what these folks did, and you've probably seen this, it looks like a pen, and at the tip, it's got a little little swivel, and underneath the swivel is a clear piece of plastic. And that way, the iPad or iPhone gets the pressure that it wants in the size that it wants, but you as the user can really see what's going on. And I'll tell you, this pad is fantastic. It's way better than those cheap, foamy ones that that you get in the gimme bags. This actually works. It's changed my world. So now I'm back to being able to use a pen. And the Jot Pro and the Jot Mini are basically the same thing. One is just smaller than the other. So you can guess which one I'll keep here at the desk in the studio. And then I'll throw another one in my travel bag so that I have it. But it's got a little screw cap that protects the little swivel when it's not in use, which is handy, especially in the old travel bag. And it just screws on the back, so it actually makes it a little bit longer, which is nice. And they've got a cool integrated little kind of pocket clip in it too. So it's worth checking out, adonit.net for these folks. So yeah, cool stuff found for sure. I honestly didn't believe it would work. I thought it was something about the glass shield that I had on my iPad mini. And I thought, well, they'll send them to me and I'll say, yeah, thanks. But, you know, still not going to solve my problem. I was happily proven wrong. So, yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff. Adonis is the Greek god of beauty and desire.
I get that confused with me all the time, John, as you might understand. yeah. Good stuff. Scott on Facebook in our Facebook group hipped us to this thing at Amazon. And my guess is you can find them elsewhere too, of course, an Apple TV mount that sits on the back of your television. It's built to clip into like the little fan vents on the back of your TV. And, it's less than $15, I think. And they say that on most TVs, the infrared signal will get to this. Actually, they say in most rooms, the infrared signal will get to it, even though it's on the back of the TV, because the way they reflect off of, surfaces. They say if you have vaulted ceilings, that it might not work. But in general, it does. And I've found that to be true with a lot of things. We bury a lot of our TV components and they work just fine. So I thought that was pretty cool. It's $13.50 at Amazon, little Apple TV mount that is built just to clip into the one of the fan vents on the back of your TV. So it gets it out of the way. Pretty cool. You going to check one of those out, John?
I don't think so.
No, yours isn't.
Mine's I got a TV cart. Yeah. You know where mine is. You've seen. Yeah. It's just sits on a shelf.
Yeah.
Seems
right.
To be pretty happy there.
Right. What do you got, John? You got a couple for us here? You found some. You found a couple.
I got a couple.
Yeah, go.
So after we had our GPS discussion, I decided to poke around here and I found a really nice kind of basic GPS app for iOS. And it's called GPS Status. And it tells you everything you need to know. And I think the question before is that, yes, I guess the iDevices have a GPS receiver. And so they use all this trickery in order to get better accuracy. But this is, you know, this tells you everything you need to know. It shows right now. So it shows your fix, which I guess is the quality of the signal, horizontal and vertical accuracy. It'll show your speed, which right now it's showing that I'm moving at 0 miles per hour. My course, which I don't have a course right now, latitude, longitude, the time and date, which, you know, is part of a GPS signal, I guess. And also it actually shows my street address. Actually, a few moments ago, it showed the address of the house next to me, but now it's showing my street address. So,
nice.
So I went through a whole bunch of them, and some of them had, you know, irrelevant information, and some were kind of clogged. But this looks to be a nice balance here. So check it out. I'll have a link to it.
Yeah. Very cool. What else you find, John?
You know, another thing, I was going through my apps here, and Dave, I've been using this one app for ages, and you may have heard it, you know, make noise every now and then in the background here, but I've been using something which, as far as I can tell, they haven't supported this in ages, and it was a weather bug alert menu bar thing.
For your Mac.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because I like to know the weather.
Sure.
You know, like most people.
Yeah.
And the weatherbug thing, you know, did its job. But the thing is, it doesn't look like it's really supported anymore. If you try to search for other locations, it can't find it. So I think they abandoned it long ago. I mean, I looked at the date on it, and it was like 2008. It was
okay.
0.9. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? I should get with it here. And I'm not sure why I had it on my machine, but, it, you know, for this episode, or a lot of times, I'll go through my downloads folder and my applications folder to see if there's anything that makes sense to talk about.
Yeah.
And so I had this one on my machine, and I thought, well, let me check it out here. And it's called a meteorologist, I guess, right?
Yeah.
And it's their tagline is the weatherman without the man. And it's basically a free app here. It'll show you everything you need to know about the weather. It'll also show you alerts if you choose to do so. And actually it did today, because we have, a winter storm warning for tomorrow. So, you know, it'll show you an icon in your menu bar if you want, showing the current conditions. You know, if you don't have the ability to look out the window or go out or get out of the basement. So it'll show you the current conditions. It'll give you a forecast for the next 3 days. Shows all the important metrics of what's happening, humidity and all that great stuff. And it draws from multiple sources. In my case, it seems to always draw from weather.com. But I guess depending on your city or state, you may have different choices. So seems pretty decent.
Cool. So just to be fair, this app hasn't been updated in over 2 years, but it doesn't mean it doesn't work, right?
December 2012 is the last time they released it, but
but that doesn't, I mean, that's okay. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, but it doesn't look like there's any reason for them to.
Right.
The weatherbug thing was definitely broken, and the parts of it did not function anymore, because I think weatherbug just abandoned the.
Sure.
And when I looked for an update, they're like, well, we don't really make this anymore. I think they make a weatherbug desktop, but it's only for Windows. It's not for Mac, because when I downloaded it, it had an EXE at the end. And I'm like, what's up with that?
What's up with that? there is the folks in the chat room are suggesting an app called Weatherman, perhaps more robust. I don't know. I haven't tested either one of them, but from After 10 Software, it's available. They've got a light version for free in the Mac App Store and a 99-cent version that's going to be 99 cents is what that's going to be. So,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. That's right.
See if I'm willing to pony up. All right. I'll give that one a swirl.
While we're on the subject of weather apps, I want to switch to iOS. I have found that a lot of development of apps in general comes from people in non-snowy climates, right? And specifically, there's a lot of weather apps that have been developed by people in San Francisco. Which totally makes sense, right? I get it. And they design these really minimalist, beautiful things that are totally freaking useless to me in the winter. They're great in the summer, but useless in the winter. And I need, in the winter, I need two things more than anything else. I need the narrative forecast. I don't need you to tell me, I don't want pretty pictures. I mean, the pictures are fine if I'm looking at a 10-day forecast, but I need to be able to tap on a day or get to the narrative forecast that comes from the National Weather Service, where it says something like for, you know, say tonight, let's look. So the forecast for tonight is periods of snow, 3 to 5 inches of snow expected. That number is actually that text is really valuable to me. So I need the narrative forecast accessible from within the app in an easy way. And I also really need and like the radar. So that I can see that, right, the storm moving in, you know, wherever I live, and I would say wherever you live, there's patterns, right? And you learn, okay, well, when the storm comes this way, I know what they're going to predict, but see where it's like this storm that's coming in. It says 3 to 5 inches, but what I'm seeing is a storm that's far more north than what I would normally expect to see dump snow on us. Now, that doesn't mean I'm wrong. or write. It just means that I know what to expect from what I've seen. Or if I see something coming up the coast, it's like, oh yeah, we're going to get hammered. You know? Okay, great. So those are the two things I need. I have been using an app on both my iPhone and on the iPad called IntelliCast. I believe I paid for it at some point in time, or they had some in-app purchase to get additional features, and I'm fine paying for it. I use it all the time. And IntelliCast is fine, but it has not been updated for the iPhone 6 Plus. And, you know, I feel like if you haven't quite done that yet, maybe this is not the right app for me to continue to use. However, I don't know what is at that point. So I would be very curious to hear any of you. And this is, you know, you folks listening at home after the fact, anybody in the chat room that has anything to suggest right now, would be fantastic. So very curious to hear your thoughts. I tried a bunch of like the AccuWeathers and the WeatherBugs years ago and really just found that their UI was more cluttered than I needed. It got in my way. It wanted to make the weather this, you know, news event. I don't need to see the editorializing. I don't need to see pretty stuff. I just want data. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I just want
to
look.
You quick. Don't need to see the weather forecaster risking their life in a.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, some that I follow. So there's actually some good Twitter feeds, Dave. So I think you mentioned it. If you didn't, though, but the definitive source, at least in the U.S. here for weather data, is NOAA.gov, NOAA.gov, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And they generate all of those reports,
right.
I think, and are the source for a lot of people.
Yeah, you're right. No, I misspoke. I said National Weather Service. And I guess maybe that's one and the same, but what I meant was the NOAA reports. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So. Oh, that's under it. And actually, okay. So one thing so they actually have some Twitter accounts, and actually there's one that I do follow, and this one's can get exciting for us here. Well, they have National Hurricane Center Atlantic and National Hurricane Center Pacific, and those I follow, especially during hurricane season. It's sure. good stuff to know. But they have a lot of useful Twitter accounts here too. Oddly enough, you know, it's funny, they seem to be present. NOAA has they don't have an app. I wonder if they're not allowed to make one, or they just rely on other people sure. to consume their data and make it available.
Yep.
I don't see an app, but I see they're on Twitter, Facebook, Flickr, Instagram, Pinterest, YouTube. Oh my gosh, they're everywhere. And they got a podcast.
Huh. Cool.
Wow, that must be exciting. Weather pod. Well, hey, you got the Weather Channel. People watch that. I always thought, you know, why would people watch a channel about the weather?
Dude, yeah. It's like one of the most popular channels. It's ridiculous. I don't care. I just want it. And that's the part I just don't want. I don't need it to be news. I don't need it to be entertainment. And there are people, and I'm sure some of you listening fall into this category, and it's fine, that find watching the weather entertaining. I don't need to obsess over it. I have plenty of other things in my life to obsess over. So I've got that. I sort of have that niche filled, you know, that I'm good to go. But I do need the data every now and then, and I need it quickly and efficiently. And so I know what I need. There you go. Hey, speaking of what you might need, in our Google Plus group, Michelle asked, are you frustrated with iTunes 12's Get Info panel? Do you want to see or use the old one? If so, select your song or group of songs, right click or control click to bring up the contextual menu. Press now and hold down on the option key and now select Get Info. And that will bring up the old style Get Info window in iTunes if you are into that sort of thing. So thank you, Michelle. Good stuff. Scott, this was it was hard not to mention this when it first came out. This has become one of my favorite little things. Scott hips us to an app on iOS for the low and bargain price of $3 called Workflow. And Workflow is basically, as Scott says, Automator for iOS, but it's better than Automator. Now, not only can it interface with other programs, but it can do almost anything you would want to do under iOS. You create workflows inside it that become apps on your home screen or plugins to the sharing menu. It will take input from the user, URLs from mobile Safari, even read a file from iCloud or Dropbox. Scott says what makes it better than Automator is that it has flow control, including if, then, else, and repeat. There's also a sane way to save variables and use them in other commands. If you're not sure what it can do, they provide some templates and shared workflows. In my opinion, it's better than IFTTT. I would actually agree with that. It serves a very different purpose from IFTTT because the work is actually being done on your device. You're not relying on a cloud service to do it. Workflow is a version 1.1 program. I believe it might even be up to 1.2 right now. But they are worth enduring. This is, as far as I'm concerned, $3 is a bargain price for this app. It's worth more than twice the price. He says, workflow is so good, I wonder if the developer could be convinced to do a version for OS 10. It is what Automator should be. So yeah, it and he's right. And the best part about workflow is you can go download it. You do have to spend your $3. And they show you the first thing that you do is create a workflow that they walk you through doing. So the whole training exercise actually results in a workflow that you can then use. But it shows you kind of how to create these workflows, and you can do them for anything, picture sharing and modifications and all kinds of crazy stuff. It's awesome. Okay. And it did get more expensive. It's up. It is 1.01 still. And it's $5 now, but still well worth the price, I would say. So check it out if you haven't. Have you checked out Workflow, John?
No.
Oh, dude.
Heard about it.
Dude, you gotta do it.
Why?
Oh my God. It's fantastic. Oh, it's awesome. It's awesome. Because you can do, it's like you get to code on, I mean, it's not coding, it's Automator on iOS. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't yet felt a need to write a workflow.
Oh, that's because you have, that's because you aren't even, that's because you and I, we all have been so trained by Apple that the only things that iOS can do for us are the things that other people do for us with iOS. And workflow mm-hmm. changes that. It puts you in command of able to do this stuff. In fact, I am going to send you a copy of it right now because I know you don't like to spend your hard earned.
No, I got
things.
Dough in the.
Do you?
Oh, if you want to give me a gift, sure.
Okay, I'm going to gift it to you right now. Nice. Yeah, you got to. You probably don't want to put this on the air, or maybe you do. Maybe you want other people to give you apps as gifts too. You got to. You got to tell me in the chat room or in our private chat what your ID? Yeah. Which ID you use for the iTunes store. That's all.
So, oh, yeah.
So do that. And I will send this through to you right now because, oh yeah. All right. Sweet. What else do we have here, John? What I said, I want to gift the app and now it's not letting me gift it to anyone. I'm saying gift. Oh, there it is. Okay. Yeah. All right. So there's your email. The sender is Dave. This rocks. And now there's no F in there, right? So, okay. Yeah. I'll send it to you now. There you go.
Man.
Okay.
Stupid iPhone. I'm getting that battery problem again.
Uh-oh.
It's dying again at 20%.
That's not good, man.
Figure this out. I think it's definitely a software issue. I think it may be that one battery utility I'm running. I don't know.
There you go.
Start it up again.
It's all gifted to you. So now when you come across that app that I have to have, you just gift me back. And then that way we force each other to try things. Well, not force, but, you know, strong arm, encourage. Okay. That's workflow. Where are we on time here? We are cooking here. Is there, I think we got through everything I wanted to get through. Is there anything on the list, John, that you just can't possibly live without here? I'm sure I can come up. I will come up with one last one if you don't. But yeah.
Well, there's one here, the one where you had a follow-up question for me. I don't know if that
I don't even know where that
Theo?
Is. Oh yeah, that was the one I was gonna pick. Let's do it. All right. Theo points out a very interesting thing. He says, I was recently out of the country and off the grid. I really didn't want to leave my Mac Pro, which is running Yosemite, but that's a different story, turned on. So I set a carbon copy cloner task for the time that I would be arriving back into the country and gave the task permission to power on the computer. I then shut the computer off. When I got back a week later, my Mac Pro was up and running. I ran the uptime command on it, and it said that it had been on since just after the scheduled CCC task. So that's a cool thing. But Carbon Copy Cloner is a fantastic program. First of all, it's awesome. I have almost switched everything to using that now for my automated daily clones and everything, because it does. The new UI is awesome. I love it. But it's awesome. But it's not doing anything that you couldn't otherwise do with OS X. So there, John, there must be a way to trigger your Mac to turn on at a specific date and time in the future, not just a time every day as Energy Saver would let us do. So what is that magic, or is there that magic?
That I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I was gonna say Energy Saver.
Yeah, but Energy Saver only lets you turn it on, you know, on a specific weekday, or, you know, on every weekday. You can say on Monday, turn it on at 8 o'clock or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I wonder if you can change the level of granularity in there, because I'm looking now, so you can say start or wake up weekdays, weekends, or every day or a specific day. And then the time. And in addition, it has, you know, you can sleep, restart, or shut down along also the same frequency. Yeah, I got to think there has to be something that can give you better control over that.
Yeah, I wonder, Furby's in the chat room has suggested using the PM set command, which might do this. I don't know. I don't know. This is one of those things where I know it's possible. I've just never had to do it. I do, however, use that schedule thing to start up. I have start up or wake selected for every day on this computer at 8 a.m. And that way, if the computer does, for whatever reason, power off, I know it turns back on. And that way I can remote access into it if I'm away. And the longest I would ever have to wait for it to power itself back up if I'm not here is 24 hours. So it can be a handy little thing. But yeah, there's got to be an option. And it might be PM set that does it. I'm not entirely sure. Scott has a question for us, John, that we will let him ask.
Hey, John and Dave, this is Scott from Los Angeles. I was just noticing at the very end of each show, the little audio loop you have sounds an awful lot like the audio loop used on the old TV show from the 70s and 80s called Match Game. But a little bit of a coincidence and kind of funny. All right, don't get caught. Thanks for doing a great show. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Scott. I'm not entirely sure what it is you're talking about there, but it is time to wrap up the show. You know, where's Bob Eubanks when you need him? Isn't that who that was?
Wow, that's some grooving music.
Yeah, it is. But was that Bob Eubanks? I think it was. It had to be.
It could be. Is that a mariachi band? That's a mariachi band.
I don't know who it was. Oh, Gene Rayburn. How could I have? He was like Beat the Clock, too, right? That was, yeah. Gene Rayburn. That's right. Yeah. Good stuff. But it is time to wrap up here, John. So I think we just gotta let it go. That's how it's going to work, you know? Fun show. I think we got through everything we were supposed to get to, or everything we wanted to get through. Hopefully we did.
I like the gong show.
You know, I was telling the kids in rock, I coach rock band club at the local high school, and I was in a gong show. My high school used to have gong shows. And up until this one year where there was this one teacher that he wanted to make the show about him. And so he gonged everybody that he could. And this one group of friends, I did this act where this guitar player and I played this thing together, and then I did like an extended drum solo, and then he did an extended guitar solo, and during his thing, this guy gonged him. And then after us, some friends of mine did a Rush song, Xanadu, and this guy gonged him in the middle. And these kids had put in a lot of work into learning this tune, and so this one kid who was the guitar player, who was very well respected by the administration of the school, he was a top student and everything, as soon as he got gonged, he made a single fingered gesture at the judge, and then started playing Purple Haze. So he was suspended, because you have to suspend somebody that makes that gesture in front of the whole school, a teacher. But
that's freedom of speech.
They did away with the gong show after that at school, which is
that's freedom of speech, man.
Yeah,
how could they restrict his freedom of speech?
Yeah, it would be. But we were talking about bringing it back. It would be. It would be a little dose of reality, perhaps, for some of the more everybody gets a trophy attitude. It would be good to see that challenged. But anyway,
yeah, I remember Gene the Dancing Machine.
Oh, that was, yeah,
that was the hilarious part.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You would hear this beginning of this music, and that meant that this guy Gene the Dancing Machine would come out and, you know, do his shuffle, and they'd throw things at him. It was hilarious.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And the host.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, cocaine is a heck of a drug, huh?
Yeah. Was the host a cokehead? I didn't know. I didn't.
He seemed. Oh, maybe he was just very energetic. Huh?
Maybe. Yeah. Who knows? To this day, so Sunday, February 8th in 1973, saw the birth of probably many things, but FTP was one of them. So there you go. It's
wow.
Yeah, I know. 42 years old. So FTP is now the answer, if I'm not mistaken. Right? Because, you know, 42 is the answer. I am going to talk about one thing quickly here. Someone was asking me in the chat room if we were using Audio Hijack 3, the new version, to record Mac Geekab, because we've always used Audio Hijack Pro. I tried out Audio Hijack 3. I actually love the interface. It's much clearer. It's totally different. And so I was quite surprised that I liked it as quickly as I did, because I've been using the old interface for 10 years and it really makes sense to me. But the new one's so much easier to get around. I can get to where I want to get without having to dig and, you know, click through six screens. And I like that. Unfortunately, one thing that they have not put in the user interface yet is the ability to control the buffer time, that being the amount of time between when sound comes in and sound is actually processed. If you lower the buffer too low, things either you don't get any sound or you get crackly sound. If it's too long, the problem is you can't do any live monitoring, which is exactly what we do. I'm not actually hearing myself direct from the mixer. I'm hearing myself processed through the system. So there is a slight delay when we do the show, for what I hear, John. But I'm used to it, and it's very, very slight. But, you know, if you go more than, and it's less, certainly less than 100 milliseconds. It's in the 50 to 100 millisecond range. But if you turn that into half, you know, a second, that's too much, and it would be very distracting. And so without the ability to set the buffering, I can't use Audio Hijack 3. It is potentially on their list of things to address. It just wasn't a priority for version 1. So if you are a podcaster that wants to use Audio Hijack 3, but you need the buffering thing, tell them, because they are prioritizing their features and fixes based on your/our feedback. So it's good stuff. I'm really impressed with it. When I do need to capture Safari and that sort of thing, I'm Audio Hijack 3 all the way. It's great. You can have them live alongside each other. They don't get in each other's way. Audio Hijack 3 imports your settings the first time you launch it, but it leaves your old ones alone. So you can test it out. All right. Now, feedback at MacGeekab.com, John, is the address to which you can send in your comments, questions, and cool stuff found to queue up for the next one of these segments that we do.
I concur, Dave, in that it should be, is that you should send things to feedback@MacGeekab.com.
Yeah, that's right. That's feedback@MacGeekab.com. 206-666-GEEK, John, is the number that you can call to if you want to leave us a message. And John, Geek is
4335.
That's right. Visit us on Facebook, facebook.com. Actually, go to MacGeekab.com/Facebook. That'll bring you right to the new Facebook group that we have. We're actually almost at 300 members. We're almost at 1,000 members on our, I think, our Google Plus group, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe we're over that. I don't know. We've got lots of people in both places. It's a lot to keep up with, and it's awesome. So pick whichever one or ones that you like, and there's a community in both places. So check it out. I want to thank you, John, because without you, you know, we don't have this banter, and I don't learn things. So that's it's how we roll. But I also want to thank Michael Johnston from the iOS show and also from GetAppler.com. He converts the show to AAC for all of us and all of you. I also want to thank all of you, because without you, John and I, we would talk to each other, but we wouldn't necessarily record it every time. So we like this. It's good. So thank you. And also thanks to CacheFly, CacheFly.com, for all the bandwidth that it takes, at least for us to get the show out of our doors and to you. Sponsors include, as we mentioned, Gazelle, Gazelle.com. Squarespace at squarespace.com/MGG. Drobo at drobo.com. That's Drobo and Connected Data. MGG50 gets you $50 off there. Lynda.com/MGG. LYNDA.com/MGG. And Smile, smilesoftware.com. And Barebones Software at barebones.com. All through Backbeat Media here. John, you have a lasting piece of cool stuff found, or some advice for people while they are looking for cool stuff?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, when you're looking for cool stuff, or even if you're going to have a disaster come to your neighborhood in the form of a storm or something like that, in both cases, you want to make sure that you don't get caught.
Made up.